baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
It is my favorite day of the week. It is a Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon here. Welcome, everybody, to the walk-off. We are live right now, by the way, so we do comb through all of the comments of the week and pick out the most, I guess I wanted to say original, but that's probably not really the process here. It's more so if we see multiple ones, we'll try and pick one in that category and then, you know, not step on too many of the same subjects, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting blend between there's a running theme of comments where everybody's kind of talking about the same thing. So we figure that's something worth discussing. Mm-hmm. But then also finding, yeah, original weird ones that
seem a little off the wall.
Yeah, random and something we haven't really talked about too much in a while. So we are live on YouTube right now. I see Josh is in the chat. So hello to everybody watching live on YouTube, as this is something we're trying to do more and more often. So
we are going to get to some of the YouTube comments in the chat by the end of the mailbag here. We do have a bunch of questions to go through, so we're going to hit those first. Of course, you can always feel free to reach out to us. We love the interaction. You can do so by dropping your comment right on YouTube here on the video. If you're on audio, you can always reach out to us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, on Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast. Join the Discord. It is a great place to constantly talk Blue Jays and baseball. There are almost 200 rabid Blue Jays fans in there, so we always get tons of questions out of that. And the link is in the the link for the Discord is going to be in the show notes, and that is always free to join. All right, I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. We are going to just get into it here. Are we going to mention Patreon now or at the end, Adam?
Yeah, we'll save it for the end. There's a Patreon. Give us money, but wait till the end to do it.
That's the Coles notes.
That's the Coles notes of it. Yeah, you bet. All right, let's get right into the comments and questions. So this first one comes in from Lauren Stewart on Twitter. He DM'd us and said, for the Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday. And a couple months ago, during a long toss, everyone seemed to be on board with letting Schneider go after the year. After playing October baseball in September and the way he works the bullpen, has your mind changed? I think he deserves the interim title taken off of him at this point. Thanks. Keep up the great work. There you go, Scott. John Schneider, how are you feeling? That's from Lauren in Calgary. We do have kind of a related note from our YouTube comments. This one comes from Andrew, who says, I think the playoffs will determine his future. If the Jays lose two games and go out in the wild card round in a sweep, you could see a move for a veteran manager. Something like that would what the Mets did with Showalter. I personally like how the team has responded to him, though, and his in-game decisions have been strong. I do hope he stays. So that's from Andrew and Lauren. We're going to talk John Schneider.
Both great comments, and I do wish to just quickly address Lauren here. Fellow Calgarian, Cowtown United here. So I even remember the long toss he was talking about. I don't know if everyone was on with moving on from John Schneider, but this was after he had just taken over, and there was all the talk within the organization of collaboration and how it felt like obviously you were just promoting somebody who is in Charlie's team. And so there was a sentiment that, are we just promoting Charlie too? I honestly believe that has not been the case. I've been pleasantly surprised with the way John Schneider has managed this team. Last night, I loved the overthinking, the micromanagement that was walking Aaron Judge with runners on first and second to load the bases with two out in the top of the 10th. To take Anthony Bass out of the game and bring in Tim Mesa to face Anthony Rizzo. Ballsy as all get out. The intestinal fortitude needed to make that move. And one thing that Buck Martinez was bringing up on the cast, you know, previous manager, so he's got a little experience there. This is not a move you just make on a whim. This is a move that he has already created the scenario in his head before it happened and had already mapped out what he was going to do if that scenario arose. John Schneider has made moves like this all year long and has definitely separated himself from the way Charlie managed this team. I like how he has operated with the bullpen. Little differences from what Montoya was doing, number one. Boy, he is not afraid to go to Jordan Romano when he needs him most. He'll use Romano for four, five, six innings if he absolutely needs to. We've watched him bring Jimmy Garcia into high-leverage situations earlier in games than we ever watched Montoya do. We saw Garcia come in the fifth. We've seen Garcia come in the sixth. We've watched Anthony Bass used after Romano. These are all differences in the way that this bullpen has been managed, and it has been executed excellently. Obviously, there's always going to be some bullpen blips, some managerial mishaps, if you will. Overmanagement, maybe. Every single manager in the big leagues is prone to these sort of things. And yes, had last night not worked out for Schneider, whew. You could tell Blue Jays Twitter was in a fury. Like, there was half people being like, oh boy. And half the people being like, what are we here? Charlie 2? What a stupid, dumb shit. You know, like, just very level-headed responses, as Twitter is prone to.
I'm sure they already had their tweets typed out in case Rizzo hit a home run. They were just waiting to hit send
just
on their
waiting to their dance on
cleverly typed out hatred for John Schneider.
So let's move to Andrew's comment a little here, because I appreciate what he's saying. And basically what Andrew's saying is that John Schneider's not guaranteed for next year yet. He truly believes that he probably needs to get past the wild card. I'm not sure if that's the case anymore. Obviously, nobody really knows what this Blue Jays brass is thinking. Right, Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, they keep their cards close to the vest. They have not announced that John Schneider is no longer the interim. But I think that the way the team has responded to him, the record that he has put up since taking over as manager, the Blue Jays were only four games above 500 when Schneider was put in. And They're 20 above now. I think John Schneider is going to be the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays in 2023. I think that Lauren is correct in saying that it's probably time to take the interim tag off. We're going to need to wait and see what happens. I might feel differently myself if I do watch the Jays get swept in a wild card series, right? But I truly think it would need to be some mega mistakes, management mistakes, you know, like it would need to be something glaring where you're like, well, this loss is on John Schneider. And just from watching him manage, I can't see him finding a scenario where that's the case. How do you feel, Adam? Like, are you a John Schneider guy at this point?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, like, I was not, I don't want to say I was a defender of Charlie Montoya. But my biggest reason for not getting rid of him was always like, who's the replacement? Like, who else is out there? There wasn't, and there still isn't, just like an elite manager sitting at home waiting for a phone call, right? So I know Andrew suggested Joe Girardi, but
right, the Joes are out there, right? Girardi and Madden.
I don't necessarily know if that kind of chemistry shakeup is what the Blue Jays need.
Honestly,
it feels premature in this team's development cycle to be shaking things up to that extent right now. I don't know. I know we did also talk about like clearing house and everything like that in the off season if things went poorly.
I think the Jays have done well enough and have performed at a level where cleaning house is probably not going to be the right move and probably not the direction that this front office takes when it comes to however the rest of the season plays out. I don't think the Blue Jays are going to fall on their face. I really believe that right now they're poised to get into that number one wild card spot to have home field advantage. If so, they're probably, I mean, we don't know yet. They're in a dead heat between the Mariners and the Rays for that second spot. But I think this team can beat either of those organizations at home in a three-game series. I just think at this point, John Schneider is going to be the guy in 2023. I could be wrong, but that's my, just looking at where this team is at, I can't see a collapse big enough to warrant firing Pete Walker, firing Guillermo Martinez, clearing out Dave Hudgens, getting rid of, you know, like I can't see them cleaning house at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you. I even swept in the first round, it would have to be decisions like the walking Aaron Judge decisions. It would have to be a series of decisions like that that backfired.
And I really get where Andrew's coming from with the idea of things don't work out. Maybe you do go with a more seasoned veteran when it comes to management, and they are out there, guys like Joe Girardi. I don't see this organization taking that approach. In all honesty, if things don't work out and they do clean house and we see a whole new management crew come 2024, which is probably when it would take place if for some reason there was that sort of move, I think we watch them go in a younger direction. I think we watch them go with somebody like if they can't get a Terry Francona, maybe they go completely a new direction and a first-time manager like Stubby Clapp, something like that, a guy that they have interviewed in the past. Mm-hmm. But
could be.
Problems for a different time. Right now, let's enjoy the winning.
I just
can't. My happy place right now, Adam, is just envisioning Vladdy running through the Rogers Center screaming, "This is my house."
Well, we'll get to that at the end. Let's pivot now slightly. There was a conversation in our Discord. Discord, free to join, by the way. Link in the show notes. Great little place for Blue Jays talk, all sorts of different things. But Simon in our Discord said, are we going to do some sort of guessing as to who is going to give up a home run to Aaron Judge in this set? And Zero Day responds with, yeah, let's start a little friendly pool here. And they're going with Simber because why not? LOL. Simon is taking Berrios. There was some other ones like Mitch White and Zach Pop's names were thrown about. And Forbesy Jr. says, low key, hoping he hits one on Tuesday. I hate the Yankees, but dang, it would be cool to see someone make history in person.
Forbesy Jr. going to the game. That's right.
Dad's taking Forbesy. Yeah, I like the idea of setting up like a Deadpool to who's going to give it up, right? That's the question. Barrios pitching tonight. Do you have anyone in mind that you think would be a Aaron Judge home run giver upper for number 61? Is it 61? Yeah, he's sitting at
to tie the record,
right now.
Honestly, at this point, and I know that I guessed that he would hit two home runs in this series and break the record in Toronto, I sure hope that doesn't happen. Now, after watching them shut him down last night, I'm like, yes, yes, let's make them wait. Let's make the Yankees fans wait.
Make them wait.
But yeah, if I'm going to guess, I'd say Barrios probably. I know Original Blunt Smoking spoke up in that combo as well, and he was like, I think Barrios as well, but off a fastball that he just leaves hanging, which has been Barrios's MO. So we'll see. I hope that it doesn't happen at this point after watching that shutdown last night. Not to take the fun out of it, but I'm very much of the John Schneider side of the argument. I don't know if you saw his press conference
before
the series started. But he pretty much was like, well, I hope that they asked him if he'd be all right with Judge hitting it in Toronto. And he was like, well, I personally hope he doesn't. and if he does, good for him. But hopefully we're up 10-0 when he does it. So that's kind of where I feel too.
There you go. Yeah, who would I pick? I mean, I've been adamant for the last month or so that I want to see him just walk straight to first base every single at bat in Toronto. So I'm going to stick with that. I'm going with nobody. I'm picking the nobody option in the give up a home run to Aaron Judge pool. So that is my choice. Thoughts on Zach Hample quickly. Touted as one of the most hated fans in all of sports. For anybody who doesn't know, Zach Hample has over 12,000 baseballs from MLB ball games. He is everywhere. Mega YouTube channel with like 600,000 subscribers. Good for him. He is hated.
We should have him on the show.
We should have him on the show. He is going hard for this ball. Does it bother you?
I don't know. I don't, honestly, man, I don't really care. Like, I don't like to see him plow over children or, you know, watch a kid drop a ball for him to grab it and him be like, fair game, which it is. You know, in his defense, it is. If you don't have complete possession of a ball, it's fair game. But also, we've watched numerous times. I mean, the one that comes to mind is Aaron Judge hitting the home run in Rogers Center, the Blue Jays fan catching it and then instantly giving it to the Aaron Judge kid, you know, like the little Yankees fan there. I think that's important for the game of baseball to keep kids intrigued and interested in the game. And if you can provide them with those moments, like giving them a ball where they remember that for the rest of their life, you literally have a baseball fan for life. So on that aspect, I think that that is great. On the other side, though, who cares? Zach Hample just seems like a little nerd, like whatever, you know? Yeah. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's tough, man, because like on the one hand, I don't know. I was watching this Sportsnet clip of, I don't know who the reporter was, but she was interviewing fans at the Rogers Center and asking them, you know, what would they do if they got the home run ball or whatever, right? And it was mixed opinions, everything from give it back to sell it to, oh man, I'm punching grandma if she catches it and I'm taking the ball from her, right? Like,
yeah.
It's a predicament. Like, as far as what Zach Hample's doing, I don't have a problem with it. Like, I think, honestly, what he's doing in its own way is, like, good for the game. The fact that he has, you know, 500,000 subscribers on YouTube, and if that is a way that, like, kids can get entertainment and connect. Like, I don't think you and me are watching his channel necessarily, right? But, you know, if there's someone wants to get a ball and he is like the expert at ball getting at a ball game, then, you know, it's, I suppose, a good thing that he's sharing his expertise. Like, it's something that, you know, he knows what he's doing at this. You don't get 12,000 balls on accident. I don't know.
My question is, Zach Hample just a rich kid? Like, he's got to be, right? Where is he getting the money to go to all these games?
YouTube, maybe. Maybe he's just maybe doing YouTube. It right. I don't know.
Just a rich YouTuber. He's rich either way.
He's good for him. Good for him. Yeah, I just want to use this opportunity because I know Zach Hample has, like, he promotes the ability of, you know, like, he's got books on how to catch a ball at a ball game and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And again, going back to the Discord. The Discord for us, for our little walk-off community, is a great place to go for things like that, because I know we've had conversations in there in the past of people who don't live in Toronto and are going to a Blue Jays game for the first time and are asking,
yeah, and
like,
where the,
you know,
best seats are.
Where's the
stuff?
Best,
yeah,
seats? Like, you know, where's a place with a bad view or a good view and stuff like that, right? And then there's lots of people local to Toronto who've been to loads of games and can give you, you know, good recommendations on cheap seats if you're taking your whatever, or, you know, like if you're coming to Toronto, make sure you check out this restaurant and all sort of stuff. So join the Discord again. It's a great place.
The walk-off community blows me away. Like, it's so cool. I can't believe that there's so many people in there just ready to help everyone else out and talking baseball. Cool. It's great.
It's the least toxic social media platform I've ever seen so far. Like, I can't speak for all of Discord.
I'm sure there's probably examples. Somebody has an example of somebody being shitty in Discord, but I haven't seen it. So
there you go. All right. Next one comes from Andrew. Second comment in the mailbag. We don't usually do this, but this one was also good. So Andrew says, there's a long-term relationship to consider with Jose Berríos. You just signed him to a long-term deal, and then the first season he's here, he gets benched in the playoffs? Come on. Stripling has been amazing, but he could be gone next year. Do you want Berríos upset with the team? Stripling could piggyback after Berríos, like Chris said. Chris Black, by the way, from Sportsnet, was on the show earlier this week. I think you lean towards Berríos with a short leash. So what are your thoughts on that, Scott? I know you like this comment. You hashtag
really
mailbagged
like
it yourself. So
yes, I did. It's a great comment, and it is a little wrinkle within that decision-making of whether you go with Stripling or Berríos. When the chips are down in that wild card series, of course, it has been talked about ad nauseum when it just you look at the wild card series and you envision that game three, who's going to go. Obviously Manoah and Gausman are game one and two, most likely. Game three, who do you go to? And I've been leaning towards Stripling. So a few things to unpack in Andrew's comment here. Number one, this front office prides themselves when it comes to long-term contracts on making a decision based on the person. This is why they went out and got George Springer, is that it wasn't just the production that he has on the field, it's the character within the clubhouse. Jose Berríos has been hailed as very similar to George Springer when it comes to that sort of outstanding character, team first guy. I think that Andrew makes a very good point with the psychology of a long-term contract when it comes to Jose Berríos, and you don't wish to ruffle this guy's feathers, who is going to be on the team for six more years if he takes the opt-out, right? Or if he doesn't take the opt-out, I mean. Mm-hmm. But my general feeling, in all honesty, is you go with who you truly believe is going to give you the best chance to win. If that's not Jose Berríos, you just need to hope that you made the right decision character-wise in signing him. Because if he's going to be a big baby and throw a big fit and be a disruption in the clubhouse because of this sort of decision, I just can't see that happening. I can't see him being that guy, especially when you look long term. And when I say long term, I don't even mean next year. I mean for the playoffs. Jose Berríos is going to pitch. Like if this
we talked about this with
go-
Chris Black, right? Like we're going to need four starting pitchers to 100%. Take us deep in October.
So if this team is actually going to be a World Series contender, if they are going to play games in the ALCS, Jose Berríos is going to be a major contributor in getting to that point. Truly.
I mean, yeah.
One starter in the ALDS probably doesn't pitch in the wild card, which means not only is he the game one starter, he's probably the game five. So maybe it does make sense for Jose Berríos to pitch game three because you trust Ross Stripling more to go game one and five when the chips are down. It is going to be incredibly interesting to see how this management team lines up the starting pitch and come the playoffs.
There is... until you get into like game 6 or 7 of the World Series, like you're not going to be skipping starts on those four guys, right? Like they're all going to pitch the whole way through until the very end. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't think there's any low stakes playoff games. Like it's, you know, Berríos is either pitching the game 3, the deciding game of the wild card series, or yeah, he's pitching the opening game of the ALDS against Justin Verlander. You know, just like either of those games feel like a we don't trust you demotion slap in the face kind of a start. Yeah. You know, I think
we talked about this, I think it was long toss, on how they will set up the starting pitching. And I really do believe that this is going to be much less rigid than maybe a lot of us fans envision. I think that Alek Manoah is obviously our game one starter. If I'm John Schneider, I loosely have Kevin Gausman lined up for game 2. If Alek Manoah wins game 1, I'm flipping the script. I'm going with Ross Stripling and hoping that they can get through this wild card series in 2 games and leaving Kevin Gausman ready to go for game 1 in the ALDS. There may be a TBD on game 2 and 3 starters when we go into the wild card series. It's not at all impossible that they leave it very loose with the way they're going to line things up.
Yeah. I mean, I almost have more confidence in Ross Stripling than I do in Kevin Gausman at this point, to be completely honest, at this point in the series. But the only pitcher that really makes me nervous is Jose Berríos.
So. Yes, he is the big question mark. And I mean, obviously you're not talking Mitch White and Yusei Kikuchi. These are two guys that we're probably not going to see in the playoffs at all. One of them will most likely be on the playoff roster in case of a blow up, but very unlikely that we watch them pitch in any sort of leverage situation.
Next one comes in from YouTube. Cap Anson says, banning the shift is like a solution for something that isn't a problem. Just hit it where people aren't. Scott, what are your thoughts on this? Is it that simple? Why doesn't it happen?
I love this comment. Obviously, it's not that simple. Hitting the baseball is one of the hardest things to do in all of sport. This gets talked about all the time. You watch any sort of pitching ninja on YouTube with the overlays, and my God, it's amazing that anyone ever hits a baseball. Like some of the filth that some of these top pitchers throw, it is just so difficult to put the bat on the ball, let alone guide it to where you want, right? That said, we have talked about this a lot here on the walk-off about I'm not a fan of them banning the shift. I think that there is no reason to ban the shift. I agree with Cap Anson. This was not a problem to begin with. And now they're legislating guys like Joey Gallo into being good players.
Yeah.
I personally would have rather seen them force guys to make adjustments, and if you can't, well, then maybe you shouldn't be playing the game. But that's not the case. They want more offense. They're going with bigger bases. They're going to have a pitch clock. They're speeding things up, and banning the shift is just one of the new rules they're going to do. But I was reading an article the other day that was talking about, I think it was on MLB.com, talking about the shift ban. And that the guy writing it, I should have written down who wrote it, but basically the sentiment was fans are going to be surprised with how little this actually changes the game. If you look at the way the rule goes, you can still have guys right up on second base. You can still almost shift. It's just not going to be quite as pronounced. So I think there is still going to be a lot of shifting guys within a game happening, just not to the level that we're used to seeing. We're not going to see the Toronto Blue Jays with four outfielders. We're not going to see John Schneider move the entire infield to the right-hand side against lefties. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but according to this article, it's probably not going to be quite the big deal everyone's making it out to be.
Well, it either needs to be the big deal everybody's making it out to be, or they're going to tweak the rule the following year.
Yes.
That's where I would land on this. Like, I don't think they're making a rule change like this, or I guess some implementation of a rule like this, so that nothing can change. Like, they want results, right? They want more balls in play.
I think the big change, Adam, is going to be we're going to watch fielders make some incredible plays. We're going to watch guys on the run making throws. Roberto Alomar-esque. I don't know, you might be a little too young, but Roberto Alomar was my favorite to watch go the other way towards third base, make that stabbing catch, jump in the air, twist his body, and throw to first. I think we're going to see more of those athletic plays with the shift being banned.
Roberto Alomar is canceled, Scott, so yes, tread lightly.
Sorry, not allowed to bring his name up.
That's all right. Man, YouTube's going to take us down for that.
It should be enough that I took his picture off the wall.
There you go. You took it down from the Ring of Honor behind you. Appreciate it.
This was originally on my wall, and I did my part and took it down, all right?
You did your part. Yes, you did your part. Replace it with an A-Rod jersey or something like that. you know, a real,
somebody good for baseball.
Yeah, good, clean character, you know. Why couldn't he have just bet on the game? Right. Anyways.
Couldn't he have been our Pete Rose? Moving.
Banning the shift. we need to see results from it. And I think... Oh, this is a tough one for me, man. If we don't see results from it.
And by results, you mean an increase in offense. Is that what you're...
No, I don't. I just mean an increase in
more
action.
More excitement in the game.
An increase in action, yeah. Like, a guy taking two side steps to his right and fielding a ball cleanly is not... necessarily action to me, you know, like what you describe, right? Like a guy that has to full sprint, lay out, dive for a ball. Like, I don't really care if it's a base hit through a gap or it's a diving catch and they get the guy out. Like, I would rather see highlight reel defense than boring singles all day. Can I be honest about
I'm
that?
With you, man. If Matt Chapman has taught me anything, it's how much I love incredible plays at the hot corner. Like, my goodness, it's just so much fun to watch him run in on a softly hit ball and on the run make a play. It is so fun to watch guys in the outfield lay out to catch a ball. Something that you don't see as much these days because analytics have shown you where you should be lined up. And so the MLB's goal here is just like you said, to create more action. So it will be interesting to see if it works.
It is, I think, a misnomer, the idea of baseball needs to increase offense in the game, right? Because I think it's like, it's bad in the way global warming was a bad term for it.
Yes.
Right? Because it's like climate change is a more accurate description of the problem. It is not just simply a warmer planet is the problem and whatever, right? Like, obviously, more hurricanes. We just had one out there on the East Coast. You know, these like massive storms that are devastating, happening with more frequency. It's terrible. More offense. Like, if just the solution is higher scoring games, it doesn't necessarily mean or equate to a better product, right? Like, would I rather watch a pitching duel where it is, you know, a 3-2 at the end of the game versus whatever the Blue Jays did to the Red Sox back in August.
Yes.
As hilarious as that wasn't necessarily a good game. I don't know. I keep going back and forth on this, but let's...
Well, here's the thing. The chat's going crazy here, so I did wish to bring up some stuff. Scott Carter says, Tony used to do that a lot. Tony Fernandez, my goodness, he was the king of going the other way and twisting his body to make a phenomenal play to get the runner at first. Taco Time says, Roberto liked the Pune, canceled. So I will just leave it at that. it should be interesting to see how things work out with these rule changes. It could be like MLB is so good at making rule changes without truly analyzing how it's going to affect the game. And then the Tampa Bay Rays take those rule changes and make them even more dominant because they somehow managed to see something within that rule change that everyone else missed. So
yeah, absolutely correct. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. This won't be the last tweak to the shift. I just want to touch on that last point about just hit it where the people aren't. Not that simple. When you've been playing baseball a certain way, you've developed a swing since you were 5 years old that got you that far. It got you that far. Right? So your swing is working. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's not just as simple as putting it the other way, right? Like millions of dollars are on the line at this point. This is why banning the shift is, I think, and like you said, it probably isn't even going to make that big of a difference, but I think the only solution in this, like you can't force a player to do a chip shot the other way, right? Like you can't force that. I don't know how you would, like, it hurts my brain to think about how you can for sure encourage it. You could give incentives, but unless those are like mega financial incentives, you know, the incentive for Joey Gallo to ground out 400 times and hit 35 home runs is millions of dollars more than having an extra 20 points on his batting average. So
very true. I don't know.
All right, let's move on from there. This one, short comment, made me laugh. Marcus G.
Actually, you know what? Before you get into that one, Adam, okay. I do want to really touchly. My God, I need more coffee. Quickly touch on Scott Carter's comment going back to the Ross Stripling, Jose Berríos. And basically he says, I think if Strip pitches after Manoa, it is also a very different look for the other team. Not sure if that really matters, but it is something. And that is actually such a good point when it comes to giving the opposing batting lineup a different look, right? Manoa is a bit of a bulldog. He relies on his fastball and his slider away. Strip, much more so a pinpoint accuracy guy, using four pitches, moving the ball up and down and left to right. So it is a different look, and that may be something that the Blue Jays organization takes into account. Now you can go ahead, Adam. I think you have hit mute, and now nobody can hear you.
How about this?
Oh, there you go. When you're talking into a mic, it's a whole
different world. Hey, that's a big difference. Sorry, I had a dog scratching at my door that wanted in, so I'm sure he's going to hop up on my chest here in a second. Okay, next one. This is a quick one. Made me laugh. Kyle Schwarber is literally just the pre-falling-off-the-cliff version of Chris Davis with 40 home runs and a sub-800 OPS.
His OPS is below 800.
Yeah, I think it was in the sevens. He's got a batting average of like 210. Because we were talking about Kyle Schwarber being a sneaky pick for MVP in the NL.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked at his batting average and everything else and quickly stopped that line of talk.
Wow, that surprises me about his OPS. The guy just hits bombs and that's about it, eh? Wow. Yeah, I mean, 40 bombs, that's pretty valuable.
He's a more effective Joey Gallo, I guess. Right.
There you go.
Let's just quickly look here. Oh, no, I lie. His OPS is currently 801, so he must have hit a double the other day.
He's creeped up above there. Still, that's surprising. Normally, when you have a guy who's hitting those sort of bombs, the OPS is always in the 800s.
Batting average, 214. There you go. There you go. Okay, next comment then. Jason says, just curious your thoughts on Kevin Biggio not tagging up last night when Bo sent that ball to the warning track. Also, as nice as it would have been for Bo to walk it off with a home run, this is probably better to have had Vladdy do it, right?
So a few things here. I am completely fine with Biggio not tagging up there with one out. Aaron Judge was one of the better arms in that Yankees outfield, making the catch deep. Biggio went halfway between second and third. He was ready to score if Judge didn't make that Bichette, that deep ball by Bichette, make the catch. Yeah, I was fine with it. I was fine with the way he played it. He's still going to score on a single from second base, which he did the next at bat when Vladdy ended the game in theatrical and heroic ways and then ran around the field screaming, "This is my house." God, I love that. This is my house. How often do you hear Vladdy screaming English? Never. And then you hear him screaming, "This is my house." Like, oh man, I was so pumped after that. And I get what whose comment was that again?
This is from Jason.
Yeah, so I get Jason's sentiment there, saying that yeah, it would have been nice to see Bichette hit it out there and end the game, but it probably was best for Vladdy. And I think what he just means is that Vladdy has had a rough September and that maybe this sort of thing is the confidence boost the kid needs to, you know, kind of place himself back as one of those big offensive cogs in this Blue Jays offense wheel. So I agree.
There we go. Well, yeah, I'm pretty much right there with you. I was a little bit annoyed with Kevin Biggio not tagging up. I mean, just from a, it wouldn't have hurt standpoint. Like, I don't know. I know Aaron Judge has a good arm, but what's the, I don't know, Scott. I don't know. It rubbed me the wrong way.
Listen, it's fair.
Really nitpicking here, though, to be critical, especially in the game.
And he did play it the way baseball players are taught to be played, to play that. I'm saying play too often here, to play that play. but literally, like when there's one out and a guy at second and it's a deep fly ball, you're supposed to go halfway between second and third in case the ball gets down and then he can score on the play. Whereas if you're sitting at second waiting to tag and it does wind up going down, you might just take third and then everyone's upset about that too, right? So
I suppose it's the John Schneider of it all, right? Like it's if it works out, great. And if it doesn't, then you're criticized for it the next day. So anyways, I was glad to see Vladdy put it in the left field and finish the game the way they did. All right. Comments here from the YouTube. That's basically it for the mailbag today as we are at the 45-minute mark. We did get a comment from Josh right off the top of the show about Dulcimerist, which didn't mean anything to me. Dulcimerist, longtime viewer of the walk-off.
Yes.
But Josh says, the most important question for today, does Dulcimerist play a Dulcimer? Or is he just a D&D nerd? So I didn't know what a Dulcimer was
until I
read this question. But yeah, I looked it up and it is like a stringed instrument.
There you go.
So there you go.
So Dulci. Answer the question.
Ultramarist.
We know you're watching.
There you go. Let us know your proficiency at the Dulcimer. Anyways, that's all we got for today. So thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for all the interaction throughout the week, too. We really do appreciate it. If you are this far into the mailbag, we would love it. If you haven't already, if you subscribe to the channel and hit like, we do really appreciate all of you who listen on audio. Our downloads go up every single week, which is, you know, it warms the cockles of the soul, if you will. So thank you so much, everybody who are doing that. If you are listening on audio and haven't hit subscribe, it really, really helps the channel. If you do hit subscribe on the audio side of things too. In fact, even if you're on the YouTube thing and you never use audio, feel free to look up the walk-off wherever you get your podcast and just hit that subscribe, even if you never use it. It goes a long way.
Download and don't listen. That's the best way to do it.
That's right. A big thank you to all of our Patreon. We really appreciate you. And for those of you out there who have donated to our new computer, as you can tell, things are going good. We're not chugging along like we used to. We're able to go live all the time. Taco Time, who's in our chat right now, he was very generous in that aspect. We've got all sorts of people who have donated throughout the last month or so to help us get this new
machine. Did you see how fast I pulled up that Kyle Schwarber stat?
Oh my goodness. Instantly. You can have multiple windows Amazing. Open at a time. Exactly. So you've got the Patreon list. We'll quickly.
Yeah. Patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $1 a week to support us there. David, Abraham, Michael, Sarah, John, Simon, Rashid, Joshua, Jeremy, Ian, Dunedin, Bob, John, Wyatt, and Patrick. I think Joey is also on that list. I haven't added him to this note there, but Joey, thank you as well. Basically
$1 a week
gets a, sorry, swallowed a bee. I'm like, Premier Ford swallowed a bee here. all of our, videos are live or that we go live for, end up on our Patreon, in the full form. So there
yes,
you go.
If you don't like the clipping or just like, would like to see the unedited version, you absolutely can join Patreon and then get it all there. We also have, what do you call it when you put out our interviews?
Early access.
Early access. Wow. Like, see,
you're struggling,
problem,
Scott.
Adam.
We need coffee. Let's wrap this up and go get some coffee.
I got up 30 minutes before we did this, and I never do that. I normally give myself 90 minutes so my brain's working, but needed the extra sleep, and this is what happens.
I hear you.
I don't remember things like early access.
All right. I'm just seeing from Taco Time here. Should do a segment on the new computer. What did you get? I don't know what we got. I'll take a picture of it, and I'll put it in Discord. How's that sound?
We'll put the specs up that the guy who helped you put it together. Yeah,
there you go. Yeah, the science nerd that helped with us.
The science guy.
All right. Cheers to everybody. Thank you. And we'll see you tomorrow for the...
Scott and Adam. Adam and Scott.
Adam suck ass
suck at betting.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll go from there. So cheers, and we'll catch you later.
Later, gang.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to picture. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.